Welcome back, everyone. I'm Dr. Kate Balistrieri, the host of the Get Naked with Dr. Kate podcast. Today, I'm speaking with Cam Frazier about anal play and pegging. Cam is a certified professional sex coach and certified sexologist. Being a former tantric yoga teacher, Cam's work really integrates scientifically validated and medically accurate information about sexual health with sacred sexuality teachings from the mystery traditions. As a coach, he helps men go beyond the surface level sex and into full-bodied, pleasure-oriented sexual experiences free of anxiety and shame. Cam is really passionate about changing narratives around toxic masculinity. He even authored an ebook called The New Male Sexuality: Masculinity, Sexuality, Male Bodies, and Men's Experiences of Pleasure. And Cam is the host of the podcast Men, Sex, and Pleasure with Cam Frazier, so make sure you check that out. Being from Australia, Cam brings not only an incredible accent, but a wellspring of knowledge, and he is also the deputy chair for the Society of Australian Sexologists. It's time to get naked with Dr. Kate. I'm your host, Dr. Kate Balistrieri, a Beverly Hills-based psychologist, certified sex therapist, and the founder of Modern Intimacy, a national therapy group. So let's dive into all things sex, relationships, mental health, and answer your questions with practical solutions and real answers. Each week, I'll share insights to help you build a healthy relationship with yourself, with other people, and with your sexuality. It's time to start thriving authentically. So let's get naked. And if you like this podcast, hit the download button so you never miss an episode. And don't forget to leave 5 stars and a review. So Cam, I'm so grateful that you are here today and that you're willing to come on and talk to us about pegging. I got familiar with you through social media. You have such amazing content and you're really instructive and so specific in helping people identify how to have more pleasure. And I'm really curious how you got into this space. What compelled you to jump in as a sex coach?
It wasn't something that I wanted to be when I was a little boy. I grew up and I was interested in psychology and counseling and pursuing that as a career. However, my own sexual journey, let's say, really impacted me and influenced what I thought I could do in the world. So for example, as a younger man, I struggled with premature ejaculation and erectile dysfunction. And I was also doing my best to, I'd say, self-medicate with alcohol during that time of my life. And so I had a lot of, you know, unhealthy relationships with like my body, with my mental health, with my masculinity. Very serendipitously, I suppose, I actually seriously injured my lower back. I fractured my spine, and it wasn't from an injury. It was just from playing too much sport as a young man. And the healing process for me was to go to Pilates and yoga. And through those modalities, I was introduced to obviously massage and physiotherapy and breath work. And through that kind of spiritual pathway, I was then introduced to sacred sexuality and Tantra and Neo Tantra. And at the same time, I was also studying psychology and I was going to a narrative therapist who was helping me unpack a lot of the stories that I had about myself and who I was as a man, who I was as a sexual man, as a lover, as a partner. And all this happened around the ages of like 18, 19, 20. So very early on in my, you know, formative years. And that radically shifted the way that I interacted, not only with myself, you know, my relationship with myself really drastically changed. And I started to really connect with my body a lot more. And, you know, I learned how to breathe and relax and release tension from my body. And then that influenced the way that I had sex, essentially. You know, I started having better sex because I was less anxious, less tense. I was drinking less. I was in a better mental health space. I was much more communicative because I was much more assured of myself. So I started asking questions of my partners. What do you like? What are you into? Like, what do you want to try together? You know, it was much more just open and curious. And then the way that I interacted with the men in my life as well started to change. I started, I say this as compassionately as possible, not giving a fuck about what they thought about me and falling in with the crowd and trying to, like, you know, perform masculinity for my group of male friends. There's a period of time where I felt quite lonely on this journey because I lost a group of friends who I'd had since I was a teen, and transitioning into like a healthier friendship group was something that felt a little bit isolating and was a bit difficult for me to do. But, you know, it's all culminated in this career, I suppose, where I can talk about sexuality, specifically male sexuality, from a place of you know, embodiment. I've gone through a lot of my own sexual dysfunctions. My relationship with pornography has really changed over the years, and I've gone and studied it as well. I've got a, you know, postgraduate degree in sexology and psychology. I've got a diploma in counseling. I'm really familiar with yoga. I used to teach it. I try to bring these two worlds together, the esoteric kind of mystery school world with the Western academia space. And the practical side of it is like where I really feel is, I suppose it's like where there's a lot of value for the people that I work with. It's something that I wish someone had been telling me when I was 14, 15 years old, kind of becoming sexually active, someone who was like giving me some practical advice, just like giving me some guidance. I was looking for that as a younger man and no one was really offering it. So the stuff that I put out into the world today is really the stuff that I wish I'd had, 15 years ago. And so it seems to resonate with guys. And I am very open about my own journey and what's worked for me and what has worked for my clients and other people. So I try to be as as educational as possible online. So I'm really appreciative that you recognize that as well. That's really lovely. Thank you.
Yeah, your content is really great. And I think there are a lot of men out there who are trying to do what you're doing, and some are really great. And your content is really top notch. Like, I learn a lot from you, and I've sent male clients to your pages to learn from you. And
Thank you.
I really appreciate the way you work so diligently to dispel a lot of myths about male sexuality and about masculinity. So, what are some of the biggest myths around male sexuality and masculinity that you find yourself encountering over and over again in your work with men?
Sure. Well, there's a few that come to my mind immediately. The first is that men are always sexual, like they have an unwavering, unyielding desire to have sex, like their libido is always high all the time, and they only think about one thing, and that men think about sex every 7 seconds. And that's where all these like tropes come from in media as well. I think of Joey Tribbiani really like exemplifying that trope in Friends. There's this narrative, this stereotype that guys are always DTF. And a lot of guys will play into that as well. They'll think that that's what they should be as a man as well. And so if they're not always wanting to have sex, they'll think something is wrong with them. If their partner, perceives them as not always wanting to have sex, then she might think something's wrong with him or might think that something's wrong with her. And I should preface this and say I work with predominantly cisgender heterosexual men. So that's like the framework that I use when I talk about relationships. And yeah, so it's really detrimental in some serious ways, such as like men can't be assaulted, sexually assaulted, for example. If they always want to have sex, then, regardless of what the sex looks like, then they should always be happy to receive it. There's some pretty serious implications when you start to extrapolate out from that stereotype and that logic, that internal logic. Another one is that erections equal arousal. So if he's got an erection, it means that he's aroused and he's turned on and he's wanting to have sex, and vice versa. If he doesn't have an erection, then he's not aroused, not turned on, and doesn't want to have sex. But we know that arousal non-concordance is a thing, which is that you can be subjectively and mentally turned on, but not be physically showing those signs of arousal, and vice versa. You can have a physiological erection, like there's an erection happening, but not be desiring or wanting to have sex. Like morning wood is a good example of that. A lot of guys have a morning erection. It's a sign of good health, as a matter of fact. You should be checking in with your doctor if you lose your morning erections, for example. But a lot of guys don't desire to have sex. They're not turned on. It's just a physiological response to possibly a spike in testosterone or REM-related sleep and things like that. But because that has been conflated, again, it has some pretty serious implications, such as men that have been assaulted, for example, who do get an erection, which tends to be about, I think the data is about 60% of guys get an erection from when they're assaulted, and about 20% of them also ejaculate as well from their sexual assault. And so that lends itself, if we're extrapolating from that stereotype or that like myth that they, consented to it when they didn't and they enjoyed it even. And so there's some pretty harmful things there. And on the maybe the not so serious side, there's relationship dynamics where maybe he is wanting to have sex, but his body hasn't caught up yet. And his partner goes, "Well, you don't have an erection. That means we can't be sexual. It means you don't like me, or I'm not attractive to you anymore, or something's wrong." And really, oftentimes, just a bit of time and focusing on pleasure is helpful for those situations. Those are two main ones. One that's maybe more specific to the conversation that I know you would like to have with me today is that if you put anything up your ass, it automatically makes you gay. So there's obviously within that a lot of internalized homophobia, and for some guys there's a lot of overt externalized homophobia as well. They sometimes project that out and are denigrating or bullying towards either queer men, openly queer and gay men, or men that they perceive to be lesser than, you know, effeminate or feminine, because again, there's the correlation between those two things for a lot of the guys and in the stereotypes that they have about masculinity. But you know, we know that there's no switch up your ass that you press and it turns you, you know, where it changes your sexual orientation. It's not how sexual orientation works. What you do sexually doesn't determine who you are sexually. But you know, there's a lot of fear for particularly the straight men that I work with, that if they do anything that's outside of the norm, and I put that in very heavy inverted commas there, or like what is considered regular and standard, which is just jerking off in front of a computer screen for the most, you know, for most guys, that that somehow means something about their sexuality or their masculinity, right? if they kind of deviate. And the word deviate there is like a really important word, right? Because that's where the idea of deviance comes from, as it as it pertains to like sexual proclivities and preferences and orientations. So that's another big myth, I suppose, is that like if you do anything other than just quote unquote normal, regular masturbation or sex, that means something about your sexual orientation, or it means you're less of a man. Right. Very often it's you're less of a man. That's the connotation.
Yeah. I hear that a lot from people who are either curious about pegging or curious about anal play, or maybe who have been seeing it in the porn that they watch, or their partners ask them to participate in it. And it does evoke a lot of fear. I think a lot of men have a tremendous amount of fear due to homophobia, and specifically around the idea of having something inserted in their bodies. For a lot of cisgender men, they equate sex with doing the insertion, right? Not being penetrated. And so the very idea of having something enter their bodies can feel really vulnerable, but also really exciting. And I'm really curious, like, what are some of the things that men talk to you about as they're entertaining what it means to start exploring anal play or pleasure or pegging even?
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head. For a lot of guys, sex is about being the penetrator. And within that, there's wrapped up a bunch of other stories, right, of being the assertive and dominant partner, the masculine partner. I hear a lot of like new age type coaches talking about the masculine penetrating and things like that. So it's you know, wrapped up in the language that they use. And sex, you know, for the other partner is the being receptive, being penetrated, being, you know, soft and surrendering and vulnerable and things like that. And, you know, there is some sort of inherent vulnerability, I suppose, to being penetrated and having something cross that skin barrier. So I think that's, you know, partly plays into it. But that's what I hear from guys, is like there's a fear of not being the assertive, dominant, masculine partner. Like I said before, that means something about their masculinity. So there's a resistance or a reluctance to start exploring that part of their body, because it'll take away from their masculinity. It detracts from their masculinity. And so one of the things that I like to like brainstorm with them, right, thought experiment with them, is, okay, what if there was a situation, and again, I work with heterosexual couples, where you as the man was strapped down to the bed and your partner was riding you, right, and you're having penetrative sex, you know, penis and vagina penetrative sex. Who's the dominant assertive partner in that particular scenario, right? You're the person who's penetrating, and your partner's the person who's being penetrated. But I would hazard a guess to say that you wouldn't place yourself in a position of power and assertiveness and dominance if you're strapped down to the bed and she's riding you. Playing around with that dynamic of penetrator / dominant / penetrated / submissive can be helpful to kind of get them out of that headspace. So that's like one of the first things I'll do with them, is really start to unpack what it is that they're, what their stories are. And then beyond that, then what are they desiring? So what is it about anal penetration or anal play or pegging even that they're interested in? Is it the power exchange, right? That's oftentimes an element of pegging specifically, is the flip of scripts in that regard. But if it's not pegging, and if it's just like, you know, anal play and anal penetration, possibly it's because they've heard me talking on a podcast about prostate orgasms, for example, or the sensations that are available to you from anal play. Maybe they've explored like external stimulation through perineum massage, that space in between the genitals and the anus, and that feels like enjoyable for them. They maybe have played with a toy before and they felt the vibrations in and around the sphincters and the anus. And so that's like enjoyable. They're like, oh, there's something here. Like I can kind of feel it. I kind of know it, but I need some more guidance and some actual advice about how to go about this, you know, safely, hygienically, and in a way that's not going to make me feel ashamed of myself. Because there's a lot of people shaming men in particular for exploring anal play and prostate stimulation, but there's so much that you can explore, and it's kind of like Pandora's box a little bit. Once you start exploring it and having prostate orgasms, for example, like your world's your oyster after that.
Well, let's talk a little bit about prostate orgasms, because, you know, even in 2024, lots of men do not know about prostate orgasms. They don't understand their anatomy down there and how there can be so much pleasure packed into this part of their body. So can you break it down for us a little bit?
Yeah, sure. So the prostate is a walnut-sized gland just behind the bladder. You can stimulate the prostate three ways. One I will call externally, one I will call indirectly, and one I will call directly. And the direct stimulation, I'm going to say, is probably off the cards for most guys because it involves sounding, which is sticking something through the urethra to stimulate the prostate, which is at the end of the urethra. So it's very intense. It requires a lot of prep work and someone who knows what they're doing. So the other two ways are much more palatable for the guys that I work with, which is, you know, massaging the perineum. So if you press up into that space in between your genitals and your anus quite firmly, you're pressing the musculature up into the bladder and into the prostate. And you might even feel, if you've got a, you know, if you haven't urinated recently, you might feel a desire to pee. You might feel like some pressure on the bladder. That's usually a sign that you're pressing into the right spot. If you're directly stimulating the prostate indirectly, I suppose, through the anal canal, you're going to be looking for a similar spot to where the G spot or G zone is if we're looking at a vagina. So about two phalanges of the finger in, about 2 inches, and up towards the belly button. So it's on the anterior wall of the anus, the same side as the belly button. So you're pressing up towards the belly button or up towards the penis. If you're not aroused when you do this, you won't feel a lot. But if you are aroused, and that's what I typically suggest to guys that are exploring this or with their partners exploring this, is do some self-pleasure beforehand. So watch a little bit of pornography if that's your thing, do some genital stimulation. You might like to masturbate for a little while, build that arousal, build that pleasure so you're feeling turned on, and then start to explore this part of your body. And if you're looking for the prostate in particular, like I said, it's the size of a walnut and it feels a little bit ridged like a walnut. So it engorges with sexual stimulation. It swells with what's called prostatic fluid. That's what it produces, is this fluid that helps the delivery of sperm, and it mixes with seminal fluid from the seminal vesicles, and that's what gets expelled when you ejaculate. And you're looking for like that raised kind of ridged size of a walnut kind of shape in the anterior wall of the anal canal. The reason why prostate stimulation feels good, essentially, is because of the nerves that surround it. So the anus has a bunch of different nerves compared to the penis, for example. There's nerves that are sensitive to pressure, for example, nerves that are sensitive to temperature, nerves that are sensitive to traction. They're slightly different to what's in the head of the penis, for example. So you feel different sensations, but then it's also the way that the anus and particularly the prostate is innervated with the nervous system. So the penis and the ejaculation response that you get, the ejaculatory orgasm, is via what's called the pudendal nerve. The pudendal nerve runs through the pudendum, which is that perineum, essentially, the space in between the genitals and the anus, and it connects to what's called the SEG, the spinal ejaculation generator in the lower back. Oh, and an important thing to note about that particular cluster of nerves is that they're only connected to the sympathetic branch of the nervous system. So ejaculation, I like to say, is a survival response. It's a fight or flight response. And if you think about it, it makes sense because you're like passing on your genetic information, you're passing on your DNA. It kind of makes sense that ejaculation would be tied to reproduction and to survival mechanisms. The prostate, on the other hand, is innervated by what's called the hypogastric nerve. And the hypogastric nerve is, it connects to both branches of the nervous system, but predominantly the parasympathetic branch. It carries more parasympathetic fibers. So when you stimulate the prostate, difference between the sensations that you feel is that you're engaging a different part of the nervous system. The rest and digest response or the relaxation response is what the parasympathetic nervous system is responsible for, which again makes kind of logical, intuitive sense, because if you're putting something up your ass, for it to feel good, you've got to be relaxed, right? You've got to be letting go and not holding a lot of tension there. What you'll hear reported from guys, and I'll share, you know, my own experience. I've had prostate orgasms in the past and I'm an advocate for exploring them, is prostate orgasms feel much more full bodied, much more intense than ejaculatory orgasms. And again, the reason why is because the parasympathetic nervous system branches out to a bunch of other areas across the body that the sympathetic nervous system doesn't innervate. A lot more sensation in the face and the fingers and the abdomen, areas of the body that typically don't light up when you have an ejaculatory response. That's one reason why prostate orgasms are different and sometimes more intense. Another reason why is because of the way the nervous system works. The prostate typically doesn't involve an ejaculation. So if you're, and you can do both. You can have a prostate orgasm that triggers like an ejaculation response, and those two things can happen almost simultaneously. But if you're having a prostate orgasm on its own, won't include an ejaculation. And so because there's no ejaculation, you don't enter into a refractory period. And the refractory period, for those that don't know, is that period of time after an ejaculation where arousal subsides and you don't really feel that turned on. You kind of feel satiated. You don't get an erection for a little while. You can't ejaculate or orgasm again for a little while. A prostate orgasm bypasses that so that you don't experience a refractory period. So you can have as many orgasms through the prostate as you like until you get tired and you want to call it quits. So it's one way of learning how to become multi-orgasmic as, you know, a man or, you know, a cisgender man, someone with a prostate. So yeah, a lot of reasons why I think it's, you know, exciting and something that I think people should explore. But something that I think I'll just throw in at the very end here that I think is also a benefit is you learn what it's like to be penetrated, as you were sharing before, Kate, and the information that you gain from having that lived experience, right? That experiential knowledge of this is how slow I need to go for it to feel safe and for it to feel good and pleasurable. I need to use lube. I can't be thrusting in there really hard and fast and going straight away. This is how attentive to the stimulation I need to be. Like all of that knowledge that you gain from being penetrated either alone or by your partner is stuff then that makes you a quote unquote better penetrator, right? Because you then have this awareness of, oh, I need to go slower. I need to use lube. I need to be asking questions. I need to make sure the position's correct. It gives you that awareness, in my opinion, of what your partner is going through if you have penetrative sex with your partner. Being penetrated makes you a better penetrator.
I love that. It's so true, right? I think we're so conditioned to experience our bodies a certain way during sex that it's hard sometimes to understand what another person might be going through, especially if they have different genitals than you do, or if they like a different kind of stimulation than you typically do. So this is a great way of really learning the sensitivity around being embodied with that.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Kind of vulnerability. As a busy professional and a self-identified foodie, I am constantly looking for personalized meals that are fast, easy, and ready to eat, and delicious. Factor is among one of my favorite brands. Eating better is so easy with Factor's super delicious, healthy, ready-to-eat meals. And each meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to go in 2 minutes. You'll have over 35 options to choose from every week, including categories like Calorie Smart, Protein Plus, and Keto. What are you waiting for? Get started today and get after your goals. There's no prep, no mess. These are easy, easy meals. They're ready to heat and eat, and there's no cooking, no cleanup really necessary. I love it. It makes my life so much easier because it helps me stay super flexible with my ever-changing schedule so I can get as much or as little food as I need by choosing my meals every week. You can pause or reschedule deliveries anytime. So sign up and save. I've done the math, and Factor is a lot less expensive than takeout, and every meal is healthy, nutritious, and delicious. So head over to factormeals.com/getnaked50 and use code getnaked50 to get 50% off. That's code getnaked50 at factormeals.com/getnaked50 to get 50% off.
What are some of the ways that people can get started with pegging or with anal play in solo sex? Let's start there.
Sure. Whenever I start talking about this, I get, you know, feedback from people that their first initial thought was they've got to like stick something large in there immediately. And I'm like, okay, I never said that, but you know, let's dial it back. And so the first suggestion that I have to people is take penetration off the table immediately. Like just don't, like if you've never penetrated or you know, felt penetration before, like just take that off the table completely to begin with. and focus on external stimulation first. Mm-hmm. And so I've mentioned before, like stimulating the perineum. So you mm-hmm. might like to do some massage with some warm oil. That can be really nice. Or if you've got some lube, you like to use lube, you can use some lube. And just massaging, you know, relatively firmly using your fingers or using your knuckles, that space in between the testicles and the anus, and noticing how it feels, right? Notice mm-hmm. if there's any pleasurable sensations. You might also notice that there could be some tension around that part of the body, because there very typically is. A lot of us hold tension in the pelvic bowl, in mm-hmm. the, you know, pubococcygeal muscle, all these like muscle groups in and around the pelvis hold tension for a lot of people. And mm-hmm. so massaging is not only helpful for building awareness of pleasure, but also for releasing tension, which is great. You know, the erectile tissue of the penis doesn't stop where it meets your pelvis. It actually there's an internal penile bulb in there, and that has erectile tissue and can feel pleasurable to stimulate, you know, indirectly through the perineum. And you might notice if you have an erection and you massage the perineum, that your erection kind of like wobbles and moves up and down, because you're stimulating erectile tissue, which is connected to the shaft of your penis, and that'll make your penis move. So you can pay attention if you're doing that to a partner, for example. So that's one way of starting this, right? And again, like I said, you're indirectly, you're externally, I suppose, stimulating the prostate by doing that if you're pressing firmly enough. Some mm-hmm. people that like to use toys, they might have a wand vibrator. These are really good for pressing firmly up into the perineum and putting the vibration, typically I suggest on like a rumble or a really low rumble setting rather than a high pitched kind of buzzing setting. And that can be a pleasurable experience as well. It can add to the type of novelty of the stimulation. And then I would suggest like moving, if that's pleasurable to you, start to move to like the buttocks and mm-hmm. massaging around the glutes and the buttocks and working your way towards the, you know, anal opening. And so again, taking penetration off the table entirely to begin with, just starting to use some lube and your fingers. And if you're worried about hygiene, put some gloves on. If you don't have gloves, but you've got condoms, put a condom on your finger or on the toy that you're using. That's an easy way to like make sure you're being a bit more hygienic. Shower beforehand, if that makes you feel more comfortable mm-hmm. as well. If you're interested in douching, there's a whole protocol for douching as well. For those that don't know, douching is just using a particular product to cleanse the inside of your anal canal, the about 3 to 7 inches before the second sphincter. But you know, you don't need to go that far if you're just doing external stimulation. But just explore the sensations that are available at the anal opening. What you'll find if you're really paying attention and slowing down, either yourself or with a partner, is that as you relax and as you feel more aroused and as you engage in this type of stimulation, apologies for the visual, but like the anal opening will start to open. It'll start to release some tension, and you'll notice that there is that opening and that welcoming even mm-hmm. of something to be inserted. So like, unless you're getting to that point first, like penetration shouldn't even be on your mind. So that's like the first practical piece mm-hmm. of advice I have for people, is just like dial it right back before you go and think about that huge thing that you're going to be inserting. Just come down to that subtle mm-hmm. stimulation and sensation.
That's really wise. And when people do start to get to a place where penetration feels like it's the next right step, let's talk a little bit about the kinds of toys or the kinds of accessories that might be beneficial and which ones to look out for.
So solo, it's going to be very difficult to use your fingers just because mm-hmm. of the ergonomics of it all. The angles that you're going to have to pull are going to be near impossible to actually get firm and consistent stimulation using your fingers. Mm-hmm. So a toy is much, much more practical. There are a few out there. I don't know if you want me to name drop companies or products, but I don't mind plugging Aneros, for example. Mm-hmm. The products are probably the best that I've seen on the market mm-hmm. for prostate-specific stimulation. I have guys that will reach out to me and say like, yeah, I tried prostate stimulation. I used a butt plug. What I want to educate around here is butt plugs are not designed specifically for prostate stimulation. They might inadvertently press up against the prostate because they're snugly, you know, in there, mm-hmm. but they're not specifically anatomically designed to stimulate the prostate. They're there to stimulate mm-hmm. the anal sphincters and the anal canal and the sensations that you get when you squeeze against them as you explore your, you know, sexual arousal, but mm-hmm. they aren't designed specifically for prostate stimulation. So that's just happened more than I can count. So I wanted to do some educating around that. But a manual prostate massage is something I'd recommend starting with. And you can get ones that start off quite slim and quite mm-hmm. slender, and they look quite svelte actually. And so they're, you know, the ones that I would recommend starting with. And then there's ones that are designed for much more experienced, you know, adventurers, let's say, that are mm-hmm. thicker and more bulbous, and you know, they start to incorporate other things in there. But definitely start off manual. Don't start off with a vibrating massager mm-hmm. immediately. Again, why? One of the reasons why, Kate, is because the sensations in that part of the body, if you've never explored them before, take a little while to be accustomed to. The nerves need to be woken up, essentially. You know, I talk about subtlety and the slowness of exploring the rest of your body around that part of, you know, the anus, like the perineum, mm-hmm. and stuff like that. The same thing goes for the internal structures of the body as well, like starting to get the blood flowing to those areas, starting to wake them up, starting to do a little bit of softer touching, and then starting to build the stimulation from there. You can always build up, but it's quite difficult to start really high and start to come down. And again, anecdotally, from all the people I've spoken to and all the forums that I've been a part of, the slowness and the buildup mm-hmm. lends itself to much more effective orgasms in the future. Mm-hmm. Right? A lot of guys like to think that if they just go hard and fast straight away, that's a very like straight white male mentality that I have come across a lot. So if they just go straight for the intense stimulation, like they'll just bust through it. Doesn't work like that typically. So that's what I recommend is, and you can buy vibrating prostate massagers that you don't have to turn on. You can start using them manually, and then you can just turn the vibrations on when you get to a certain point. And then it's about finding what works for you. There's patterns and intensity levels, and then there's, you know, different types of vibration, like a more rumbling, deeper vibration compared to a more high-pitched buzzing. And people like different things. So it's about mm-hmm. finding what works for you. The other thing that I'd recommend here in terms of products is a stainless steel wand. So these look like half crescent stainless steel.
Almost like if you were to take an eyebrow ring, but like make it really big, right?
Totally. That's a great analogy. Yeah. And the reason why I like that, again, because it's manual, it also works with all lubes. So if you're mm-hmm. using like a silicon product, you got to be mindful of the lubes that you're using. But if it's stainless steel, you're good to go with everything. And I'd recommend if you're doing some backdoor play, silicon based lube instead of water. Typically, I'll suggest water based lube for most things, but silicon for anal exploration because it doesn't dry out as quickly and it's a bit thicker, a bit more viscous, and it allows for a bit more easy penetration. And the reason why I like a big stainless steel wand is because it's quite heavy. You know, the energetics of it, if I get a little bit esoteric, yeah, can feel a bit more like safe and can feel a little bit more, you can feel a bit more vulnerable with it, and it feel like there's a bit more power and a bit more leverage to it, and it gives you a bit more control than a little vibrating device will. And beyond that as well, I am a big advocate for, as I kind of mentioned in my own sexual journey, releasing tension and tightness from the body. And a wand, like the stainless steel wand, is a great tool for almost doing like a trigger point massage in your anus and doing what's sometimes called a de-armoring practice, where you're exploring in like a clockwise or counterclockwise way the points of tension and tightness and soreness that you might have in your anus. Because like I said before, we hold a lot of tension there. When we get scared, what do? We typically tighten up through the bum and through our glutes. And so using a wand like that for maybe a bit more of a therapeutic reason as opposed to a recreational, you know, pleasurable reason can be a great way of like releasing tension, allowing you to soften, allowing you to experience more pleasure in the long term. So I'm a big fan of suggesting that as a practice as well.
I've heard from a lot of men who have practiced this way and used the stainless steel wands that there's a different experience of fullness in the body too, because of the weight, because of the shape, because of the sturdiness of the bar, that it really does evoke a much different sensation of being completely, I don't know, the only word that's coming to mind right now is full, but just present with being sort of completed in that way.
Yeah, I think it's a beautiful way to describe it. And, you know, if people are interested in learning about experiences, there's plenty of forums online. I know Aneros, for example, has a bunch of free forums that you can access where people talk about their experiences, because I think that's a really important part of the learning journey is hearing about other guys celebrating and acknowledging like the exploration of their body. I actually think it's a missing piece of our societal, like collective way that we think about male sexuality is like it's oftentimes spoken about in a very braggadocio way, and it's not very vulnerable or very celebratory or even really like intentional and meaningful. So I really advocate for guys going on and checking out forums where men are just open about their sexual exploration and they are celebratory about it. That's the piece of the puzzle that comes to my mind.
Well, I think that's really smart, and I'm grateful that you're bringing that up, because I find that so many men are really disembodied in the way that they perform sex instead of experience pleasure, and especially in the idea of being receptive to something entering your body. It can feel so much different and so unpredictable to the ways that many men would expect themselves to feel. And it can bring a whole host of emotions up that they really would benefit from processing. And what better place to do that than with other men who have experienced that? Well, let's transition into pegging and differentiate between some of the anal play that we've been talking about in solo sex. And what does it mean to engage in partnered play, whether it's a partner penetrating you with a toy versus pegging?
The first thing I'd like to say here is that I'm by no means an expert in pegging, but someone who is a woman by the name of Ruby Ryder. She's fantastic and has a whole collection of resources about pegging, which are free. And I highly recommend checking that out. But something that I want to do a little bit of educating about first is like, what actually is pegging? So for people that have heard the term, I mean, I think it came from Dan Savage's podcast back in the day. Actually, they kind of, Dan put a call out for this particular sex act. It was a crowd favorite, I suppose. So it's the act of one partner wearing a strap-on, and strap-on's like a harness with a dildo attached to it, inserting that into the anus of their sexual partner. Very common, let's say, in the heterosexual context, where a woman is wearing a strap-on, harness with a dildo, and anally penetrates her male partner. But it's also part of the lesbian sex, and it's also part of trans and non-binary sex as well. So it gets pigeonholed into heterosexual sex for the most part, but it's definitely inclusive of people regardless of what their genitals look like. The reason why someone might like to participate in that from both ends of the spectrum, right? The person who's being penetrated and the person who's using the strap-on, could be the power differential there, the swap of very stereotypical gender roles within that heterosexual context. It could be the exploration of like anal stimulation, again, in just a bit of a different way. Very often, because of the positions that have to be employed, there's a power play element to it, whether that goes acknowledged and it's overt or whether it's subtle and more subdued. The experience, I suppose, of being penetrated by a strap-on, as I've heard so many other guys share with me, is a vulnerable experience, right? It's a vulnerable thing to put yourself in, to have that skin barrier across. And then there's things to take into consideration here as well. Starting off small, as I've mentioned before, with something that's a bit smaller, a bit more slender, and maybe not so intimidating. And then you can start to build up from there. Same thing with vibrations, right? You can always start small and build your way up. It's very difficult to start up and possibly hurt yourself and then work your way down. There's dildos out there that are curved in particular ways, or that have certain textures to them and things like that, add to the stimulation, add to the sensations that are available. But if this is something that you want to do with your partner, if it's like, if you've watched porn of people pegging and it's like a desire and a fantasy that you have and it's something you want to explore, as with all fantasies, as with all desires, this is my opinion, obviously speak to your partner about the sex act itself, but the underlying reasons why that's arousing to you and why you desire and why you fantasize about it and what about it turns you on, right? What is it that you get from this? Is it because you want to see your partner in a position of power, or is it because you personally want to be in a position of surrender, or is it because you want to explore certain positions that aren't available to you when you're the person who's penetrating, or is it because you're interested in anal penetration and this is the only thing you've ever seen that involves anal penetration? The map open itself up to brainstorming and negotiating. But the act, of course, is important to acknowledge, but the underlying reasons of why that's of interest to you, why it turns you on, I would say more important than what the act specifically is, because that's how your partner's going to go, oh, okay, I understand why that's something you're interested in. I can get that. I can see that's something you want to explore, and will be hopefully more amenable to then having a conversation with you about the thing that you're interested in.
It's so true. I mean, there can be a lot of fear for people on both sides of that conversation if this is a new concept to them. And if it's a new concept to think about uncoupling your relationship between gender and power or gender and penetration, right? It doesn't make someone less of a man or less of a woman if they take on different kinds of sexual activities. And I think it can be really unnerving if someone doesn't know a lot about pegging or doesn't understand a lot about anatomy and all of the pleasure potential that lives in that part of the body, not to mention the really beautiful psychological dance of living in different emotions during sex. And I think, to your point, right, really sharing the why about the fantasy can be empowering for both partners, because it can get past some of the ideas or the myths that you have about what this activity means about someone, because it doesn't mean anything about them except they enjoy that activity. So really thinking about what emotions come up when you are going to be the penetrator, if that's not the role you typically take on. How does it feel to embody a sense of power in that way? How does it feel? Do you have an urge to humiliate, or do you have an urge to caretake? Like what feels alive in you that maybe is new? Or maybe feels exhilarating and you weren't expecting, or feels scary. You may not know until you engage in the activity, but that's a great conversation to debrief around after. And same if you're the person being penetrated. You may never know. You may have not known what it feels like to be afraid or to be in anticipation of feeling something in your body. You may not know what it feels like to sort of squeeze down on something and feel this pressure. I mean, there can be a lot of emotions that come with feeling satisfied, vulnerable, scared, humiliated, and it might not make sense about why those feelings are arousing. And I would say it probably doesn't have to make sense, because it's all normal as long as everybody's having a good time and consenting to the experience.
Yeah. And something that I think is important to acknowledge is like the spectrum of the way that you can engage in all sexual acts, but in pegging specifically for this conversation. And so one of the things I like to do with my clients is we'll find resources that demonstrate and portray the spectrum of the way that this could be explored, right? From something that's maybe a bit more BDSM oriented and the power play is like really overt, and maybe the humiliation element is part of it. And and then there's like the, as you mentioned before, there's like a much more tender, caring way of engaging in this act. And so we'll find ethical porn or other resources that kind of demonstrate and show the way that this can be explored in a variety of different ways, because they might have only ever seen one version of pegging. And that's very true for the guys that I work with specific sex acts. They're like, okay, this is what I've seen in pornography, or this is what I've seen in movies or whatever it is. And like, I want to do that. And they're unbeknownst to them, there's a wide range of ways that you can engage in that very particular sex act. And so broadening your horizons is what I'm getting at here, I suppose. And going out and sourcing ethical material that showcases the way that you can engage in this is so educational and so can be very eye-opening. Like, oh, wow, we could do it in this way. And that actually feels way better than the way I originally thought about it. Can be a light bulb moment for a lot of couples.
It really can. It really can. Kim, this has been so informative. I can't tell you how grateful I am that you're sharing your wisdom about the body and about all of this pleasure potential with my community. And you have an ebook that's out right now.
Yeah, I've got a little ebook that you can access for free. It's just a short one that's about male sexuality, and it covers some of the things that I've spoken about on this podcast with regards to myths about male sexuality. So if you're being confronted or challenged by some of the things I've said here and like, oh, I thought that about men, then this little ebook is probably going to be right up your alley, because it debunks some of the very common things that we think about male sexuality.
That's awesome. And where can people find that?
Just on my website. It's cam-fraser.com. And for the Americans listening, my last name is F-R-A-S-E-R. It's been spelt so wrong so many times. I used to live in America as well, so I know that sometimes an I or a Z is thrown in there, but it's cam-fraser.com.
Wonderful. We'll put it in the show notes too. And on social media, people can find you at
The Cam Fraser. And I'm on all social media. So wherever you like to go to get your social media stuff, just find me there. And send me a message. I'm happy to receive messages from people as well.
Amazing. Well, thank you again, Cam. This has been so insightful, and I'm so grateful to you. And thanks everyone for listening. I hope you've taken away something new today and maybe something to talk about with a partner or explore on your own.
Thank you for listening to Get Naked with Dr. Kate. You can follow me on Instagram and TikTok at Dr. Kate Balistrary, and on YouTube at Modern Intimacy. If you have questions you want answered on the podcast, feel free to email me at question@getnakedpodcast.com. Our Modern Intimacy team is here to help you and to provide you with support. Feel free to schedule a free 30-minute consultation at the link in our show notes. And don't forget to join our newsletter for insights, surveys, and articles sent directly to your inbox. You can sign up at modernintimacy.com/newsletter. New episodes drop every Tuesday. I'll see you next week. Disclaimer, this podcast is not a substitute for therapy and does not constitute a professional relationship with me, Dr. Kate, or with Modern Intimacy. This podcast is for education and entertainment purposes only.